This is the Homebase Travel Agent Show. I'm Barry Kantz, your host, and this is show number 238 for February 21st, 2010. The music in this podcast is provided by the IOTA Alliance. The song you're listening to is Break the Mold, and it's by the artist Schiltz. And it's from the album A Hat Trick from Head Boppin'. You can find a link to this music in my show notes at www.hometravelagent.net. Once again, I'm Barry Kantz, your host for the Homebase Travel Agent Show, and welcome aboard. I want to thank you as a listener, and I want to thank you if you're subscribing to the show. That's very important to me, and I really appreciate it, and it's great to have you on board as part of the Homebase Travel Agent family. And speaking of this show and the family, you know, we've been around doing this show now for 5 years. Back in late February of 2005, I produced the first Homebase Travel Agent show. So this is show number 238, and this is the fifth year that we've been doing this. And it's a weekly show. And for those of you just tuning in, the show is all about the travel business. And we talk about suppliers, destinations, travel agent training, expos, fam trips, all things related to travel and the travel business. So stop in anytime and take a listen, and I hope the show serves you well. I hope it helps your business, and I hope you find it interesting. And coming up in the co-hosted segment, we're going to be talking about an amazing race. And that race is the Yukon Quest, 1,000 miles of mushers and their dogs. And we have a special guest who's going to tell us all about it, so stand by for that. Now, if you'd like to learn more about the Homebase Travel Agent show, you can go over to the website at hometravelagent.net and check us out over there. You'll find the show archives. Most of the shows going back a couple years are there, and you can pick your topic and listen to what you like. You can also sign up for the email newsletter, and it contains the show notes every week from this show. And there's a spot on the homepage at hometravelagent.net for you to do that. Now, as we get into it here, I want to talk a little bit about next week. Next Saturday, I'm flying off to Orlando and then driving down to Jensen Beach for a couple of days. And then Gail and I are heading down to Miami for the rest of the week. Now, I'm not flying out until Saturday, so I expect Lorraine and I are going to be recording a show on Friday. And what I want to do is produce that show Friday night and get it up and available for you before I leave on Saturday. But just in case, if my plans fall through, you know, there may not be a show next week, but I've got every thought in place so that I can do the show that's coming up next week. And actually, that will be into March, won't it? Wow. Hopefully the spring weather will follow. And I'm looking forward to getting back down to Miami. We were down there just before Christmas and had planned to stay at the Epic, the Kimpton Hotel, right in downtown Miami. But plans didn't work out too well. The Epic had some problems with their systems in the building, and they had to shut the whole building down, and we didn't get to stay there. But this time they gave us a couple of vouchers for 2 free nights because we couldn't stay there back before Christmas. So I've got vouchers for 2 free nights at the Epic in downtown Miami, and we're going to take advantage of those coming up here next week, and I'm looking forward to that. It's a Kimpton Hotel. The Kimpton Hotels are a small boutique chain of hotels, and they do a great job at customer service. And I really enjoy that chain of hotels. And this is an unpaid endorsement of the Kimpton Hotel chain. With that, what I want to do is get on into the co-hosted segment of the show. And we'll do that coming up right now. Welcome, everybody, to the Homebase Travel Agent Show co-hosted segment. And we have a special guest here today. And it's special for me because I'm a big dog lover. And if you've listened to this podcast over time, you know that I have a dog, and he occasionally participates in the podcast, and he just might do that here today in the show. But the reason this is special for dog lovers is because it's about the Yukon Quest, and that is going on right now. And what I'll do is I'll turn it over to Lorraine Romero, and she can introduce our guest.
Great. Thank you, Barry. for any of our past listeners who know me, know my love for Alaska and Canada and all the things that you can do up there, and that 2 years ago, Gail and I were able to see the start of the Yukon Quest, which is a 1,000-mile international dog sled ride, which I find absolutely fascinating that right now there is this huge event going on, and it's not the thing they're televising on television, right? They've got all the people in the Olympics down in Vancouver, but there's another event that's going on, and we have a special guest. Her name is Tara McCarthy. She is the media diva for the Yukon Quest, and we wanted to have her on for a short while to be able to talk about what is going on in the other side, that where the real heroes are the mushers and the dogs, and they raise for kibble. So, Tara, welcome to the show, and give us a little bit of information about the other event that's going on that I find much more fascinating.
For sure, and thanks so much for that introduction, Media Diva. I've got to change my name tag. That's great. Well, I am here live in Whitehorse, Yukon, and this is the site of actually the finish line of the Yukon Quest. You're quite right. It's a 1,000-mile international sled dog race, and the way that it works, this is its 27th year in the running, and the way that it works is it either starts in Whitehorse and ends in Fairbanks, or like this year, it started in Fairbanks, Alaska, and then ends in Whitehorse, Yukon. So that's just a way to switch it up, but the course is always pretty much the same. The route goes this year from Fairbanks, Alaska, straight through a number of checkpoints, right on through Alaska to Dawson City, Yukon, which is just across the border, and that's the halfway point. That's about the 500-mile point. And at that point, all the mushers stop and take a bit of a rest, and then the second half is all through the Yukon, crossing through a number of different communities, and then into Whitehorse. So that's the basics behind the race, and throughout the years, it's been touted as one of the toughest sled dog races around. Not only is it because of that whole endurance portion that comes in, you know, 1,000 miles to traverse, but also there's just a lot of competition and strategy, and we've certainly seen that come out in this year's running of the race. The 2010 Yukon Quest actually just wrapped up on this February 15th afternoon in sunny Whitehorse. Seasonably mild temperatures, which has been lovely for all of the crowd that came out. Hans Gott is actually a local Yukon musher, and he arrived just after 1:30 here in Whitehorse and crossed the finish line. He was the first, and so the winner of the 2010 Yukon Quest. And it's just been incredible. This is the fourth time that Hans Gott has taken the quest. He took it once before in 2002, 2003. He also won 2004, and now he's adding this one. And I think one of the biggest things to talk about is just how fast this race has gone this year, because not only did he cross the line, finish line, first for the fourth time, but he did it record-breaking. He now holds the fastest finish time at 9 days, 0 hours, and 26 minutes. That's 1,000 miles in only 9 days and 26 minutes.
That is a phenomenal amount. The fact that they're running the entire time except for during the mandatory breaks, to be able to do it in that kind of time is amazing. So these are actually, the dogs are the athletes.
You're quite right. The dogs are the athletes. And I should say that they do have a couple of mandatory breaks throughout the route, but there's also a number of different things that the mushers do. And it's all really according to their strategy. As they're traversing from, like I said, in this case, Alaska through to the Yukon, they're more than welcome to stop throughout the course and veer off the trail slightly and set up camp overnight. Many of them do. It's all about really feeding off the dogs, like you said, which are the athletes here in this race, and noticing how they're doing, if they're getting tired. Oftentimes during the day, since we have been seeing milder temperatures in this 2010 run of the race, they're getting a little tired because of the sun beating down on them. It's quite warm. Also, certain parts of the trail are a lot more difficult than other parts of the trail. For example, they go over a portion called Eagle Summit when they're on the Alaska side. And in years past, we've seen storms hit Eagle Summit. Oftentimes, it can just be such a difficult part of the trail. So they really have a relationship with the dogs, the mushers, and that's exactly how they put together their teams as well. And through that relationship, they know how their athletes are doing. So they know when they might need a rest. They know when they might be ready to go. And, you know, I must say, seeing some of them come in to the finish line today and still pulling in their harnesses, almost ready to keep going for a few more miles, was quite incredible. You can just see the stamina and how happy they are, wagging tails when they're coming in or out of a different checkpoint. And it's really amazing to see. The dogs themselves, you might be surprised when you first see them. I know that I was the first time I saw a dog mushing team, as they tend to almost be a little bit smaller than what you might expect. You'd almost expect these gigantic Siberian Huskies, for example, just sort of leading this sled. But a lot of them tend to be a little bit smaller, almost understated to what you might think, but the power behind them is just incredible. And, you know, they're barking at the finish line or barking at a checkpoint line, and it's just an amazing thing to see in that connection, like I said, between the musher and the team.
And the weather can really vary also. I believe when I was there, granted it was 2 years ago and the entire climate can change, when I was there in Fairbanks, it was 43 below. It was cold even for them. Now, the dogs tend to run better in cold weather than the weather that I'm looking at that's there right now, which is about 34 degrees. Is that correct?
It's true. It all depends on the teams. I mean, speaking with Hans Gott, our winner this year of the race, I did speak with him about that at the checkpoint in Dawson City. And I know that he had some interesting things to say about it, because when you think about it, he's actually been training his team here in the Yukon over the course of the winter. So a milder winter, therefore, makes for milder training. So in some ways, they're able to adapt to these differences. Most, if not all, of the mushers will come to Alaska or the Yukon to train with their teams, obviously to climatize them before doing such a race, just to get them prepared. So when we are seeing milder winters, as you're quite correct, we are and have seen over the course of the entire trail for this run of the quest, oftentimes the teams are a bit more prepared for that. Not to say that they obviously don't get a little exhausted when they are seeing that heat in the middle of the day, but it does make for a very different race. Obviously, when we're seeing the record times that they broke this year, when we were questioning Hans Gott at the finish line today, all the reporters gathering around, everyone wondering what his strategy was, a lot of it did have to do with the trail conditions. The trail breakers for the quest were able to mark the trail leading up to the kickoff, February 6th, that was, I should say, in Fairbanks, Alaska. And leading up to that February 6th date at the start line, they were prepping the trail, and they were able to sort of pack down that snow to create a hard, firm surface. And then as a little bit of snow would fall in between that preparatory time, then that created a bit of a cushion. So in many ways, a lot of the mushers were saying they had ideal conditions. Thinking back to Eagle Summit that I mentioned earlier, in the past there's been storms, it's been treacherous, a lot of teams have had a really tough time making it over, and this year a lot of them were saying that it was just great, it was incredible. And yes, it takes a lot of work from the musher and the team to run up those steep climbs, and it takes a lot out of them, but otherwise they were just saying it was a fabulous run.
Well, how many teams do you have this year?
This year we had 24 teams in total that participated in the 27th run. There are certain ways that teams will start to drop out of the quest, I guess is the best way to say it. One certain way is a scratch. A scratch can be determined by the musher itself, and it can be determined in a number of different ways, and we have seen one scratch at this point in the race so far. Jerry Willemitzer scratched on Saturday, that would be February the 13th, in Dawson City. The situation there was he left Dawson City after the 36-hour mandatory layover, and that's just a rest, like I said, that's the halfway point of the race, so that's a rest for both the musher and their team, and for them to build up some calories and the rest of it. After that layover, there's a portion of the trail. It's called King Solomon's Dome. It's quite a difficult portion, high altitudes that we're looking at there. And as his team was starting to go up, the plastic runners that are attached to a sled for this type of a sport, They'd been giving him some trouble, even leading up to Dawson City. So as he noticed this occurring again, as he was attacking King Solomon's Dome, he realized that this was putting a lot of stress onto the dogs. The sled wasn't gliding across the snow as he'd hoped. He wasn't taking the trail the way that he wished he had, and therefore he decided to call it a race. So he returned back to Dawson City and checked in just after 2 o'clock in the morning to say that he was done. At this point in the race right now, having seen a winner cross the finish line today on February 15th, we still have 23 competitors that are participating in this running. And I should say that that's a record on its own as well, because in the past we've seen a number of different mushers due to a number of different reasons, whether it be problems with the team, problems on the trail, all sorts of different reasons dropping out of the race. So this is unprecedented at this point. Just to let you in on a comparison, last year, 2009's Yukon Quest, by the end of it all, 11 mushers had dropped out and scratched.
Wow. That's one of the things I really appreciate about the sport is the dogs come first. They absolutely come first. Their health comes first. And that the veterinarian gets to wear the cowboy white hat and black hat. You know, they get to be the good cop, the bad cop, and that the health of the animals really do come first. And I just find that really commendable, because how often do we actually do that? So when they start, how many dogs do they start with, and what's the minimum they can come in with?
They start with 14 dogs all together, and then as they go through the different checkpoints, there's also portions of the race that are dog drops. And this is an opportunity for them to evaluate their own team, see how they're doing, and oftentimes, just like it sounds, drop a dog, which means decide that that dog might not be going on, or well, will not be going on from that point. And that's, once again, like you said, just putting the health of the dog as a first priority, because as we were discussing earlier, these dogs are the athletes here. So you don't want to push your team further than they can go. So the mushers and the vets that are checking in on site at all the different stops along the way for the race trail, we'll monitor the health of the dogs, how they're doing, making sure that they're eating, they've got enough, you know, meat on their bones, and they're attacking the trail well and eating well. And the evaluations sort of come from there, and then dogs are taken off the team as it goes. At this point in the race, we saw our two leaders, Hans Gott, and then at this point, Lance Mackey has also come in. He's a crowd favorite for sure. They both came in with 9 dogs so far. So, but they found they were dropping quite a few towards the latter part of the race, and it can be due to a number of different reasons. And that's sort of how that works. But 14 to start for sure. We've seen a couple teams still hanging in there with 14 dogs, but some of them have quite a few miles to go, so only time will tell as to if their team will thin out from there.
Wow, this is exciting. And I'm so happy that you've been able to. We literally, just for our listeners, Tara and I connected today to be able to narrow a time down for the recording. So I'm really appreciative of the fact that you were able to come on and give us the information. And it's so exciting because they just came in a little while ago. Lance just checked in just an hour or two ago, and we're able to give a shout out to the two winners. And really happy to have you on the show. Thank you. Now you have a Twitter account and a Facebook fan page that people can connect with to be able to get some information?
We do. It's actually been one of the most crucial points of the Yukon Quest this year. We have our official website, which is yukonquest.com. All sorts of information there. We've been updating it with articles, not only profiling the people that you hear the most about, the mushers and the teams, but also all of the volunteers along the way, some of the characters you meet at the checkpoints. And then in addition to the official website, we've also been keeping going a Facebook site that has just lit up. We couldn't believe the sort of response we were getting from this. Because as you mentioned at the beginning of this interview, there is not television coverage. You cannot necessarily open any old paper and find out about the Yukon Quest. So this has become a portal for people to not only hear about everything that's going on with the race as it happens, but also to join in the fun. So if you go to Facebook.com and then just search for Yukon Quest official site, then you can become a fan of that. And what that enables you to do is not only get all the different updates in your Facebook news feed as to what's going on, because we're updating live at the checkpoints, but it also gives you a chance to interact with other Yukon Quest fans. If you're not sure about some of the rules, how these sorts of races actually work, you can ask questions. Everyone's helping each other out and answering those questions. They're also posting fan photos. So we've had tons of great photos of all different mushers, all different points along the trail, people updating their photos. We update photos as well. Videos go up on there. It's really just a multimedia way to interact with the Yukon Quest. And then we've also, in addition to that, like you said, created a Twitter account. You can find that at twitter.com/YukonQuest2010. And there you can once again follow along with some of the updates. You can even just get those right to your cell phone. And it's just another way to be sure, keeping tabs on the race itself. And I'm more than happy to chat with you both today because it has just been a phenomenal race. We can't believe how fast they were cruising into Whitehorse. And it's definitely been an exciting day. Tons of people down at that finish line. And, you know, unfortunately, Hans Gatt did have to say that this might be his very last quest. He was quite emotional at the finish line. He was so incredibly proud of all nine of his dogs that pulled him into the finish. But, you know, he sort of had that never say never attitude. So we're hoping that maybe he's just tuckered out right now, but we'll see him around for 2011.
Oh, that's great. Barry, did you have any questions for our guests?
Yeah, I'm kind of curious about the fans that turn out to watch the finish line, watch the people come in. Are they from... where are they from? What are the fans like there?
Well, there's actually quite a mixture. Because we do have mushers that are entering the competition from just about anywhere. This year, we've seen a number from Alaska, Belgium as well, Switzerland's represented, of course, some in Canada. They're coming in from here, there, and everywhere. A lot of them are mostly Yukon and Alaska, unless they've been following the trail thus far. And they're hanging out, waiting for the mushers to come in. One thing that's been really interesting about this year is it's difficult to predict when the teams are going to be coming through the different checkpoints. But this year we've had a bit of a cheat sheet, I guess you could say. Sponsors come on board Spot, and Spot has provided 23 of our 24 mushers with GPS systems. So then these can be tracked live through the official website, and they update every 10 minutes, sending a signal. So we can see whereabouts they are on the trail. So this has taken a lot of the guesswork out of the Yukon Quest, you could say, as we've mostly been glued to our laptops, figuring out when they'll be back in to a checkpoint, to the finish line, and the rest of it. So it's nice to see that so many people could join us today, because oftentimes the quest ends, whether it be in Whitehorse or Fairbanks, in the middle of the night, and mushers are coming in at 3 in the morning. So only mostly the hardcore fans are out for that, but we've seen a great crowd out here today. And Barry, yeah, it really is quite a mixture. I know that along the trail as well, our youngest musher this year, 19-year-old Peter Fleck from the UK, his father was along for the ride the entire time. And Peter's still working his way to Whitehorse, but he's doing a great job, and just so much persistence there. A lot of families on the road with us along the trail as well. They'll certainly be front and center at the finish line to see who they're cheering for come in.
Do you have a date for the quest for next year?
At this point, I'm not positive of the date for next year, but I can tell you about some dates that are still coming up from here. Although we have seen the first couple of winners come in, there's still obviously another 21 or 20, if someone's come in while I've been chatting with you both, to still come across the finish line. So we'll be seeing mushers come in throughout the week here in Whitehorse, Yukon. So we have Quest Fest going on. And Quest Fest is an event that happens whether it be in Fairbanks or Whitehorse, wherever the finish date is determined. And it's just a way for people to interact. We have a number of different activities going on. One that people just come out in droves for is Meet the Mushers. And that's when it happens before and after the race. And that's just when people can quite literally come on out and get a Yukon Quest poster signed, maybe a t-shirt if they like, and shake hands with their favorite musher, or shake hands with them all, and have a little chat with them, maybe ask them about the sport itself and how they got into it, those sorts of things. So Meet the Mushers is happening here in Whitehorse on Friday, February the 19th. And then on the 20th, Saturday, February 20th, the event always begins and ends with a banquet as well. The start banquet happened in Fairbanks this year, just before the start date on February 6th. And what it is it's a dinner night. All of the mushers are there, the handlers as well. They're the people that are helping the mushers out along the trail. And that's the night where the starting lineup is chosen. And they basically choose a number out of a hat, and that becomes what's called their bib number. So that's the number that you'll see them wearing as they're crossing the start line. And that's a sponsorship opportunity for companies to sponsor a specific musher according to the number. And so that's how the starting lineup is chosen. And then at the awards and finish banquet, which I said will be happening this Saturday, February 20th in Whitehorse, that's where different awards are given out. Rookie of the Year, Spirit of the Quest, which is given to the sportsmanship, sort of the iconic individual throughout the quest. There's also a Dawson City Award. The Dawson City Award is 4 ounces of gold that's given to the first musher that crosses the checkpoint line in Dawson City. Just so happens that this year, that was also Hans Gott, who was our winner of the entire quest itself. So these are the sorts of things that will still be happening leading up to the end. And there's also the Red Lantern. Red Lantern means the final musher to come across the finish line. So we'll wait and see who that might be. And hopefully they'll make it just in time for the banquet. And if not, you know, they can just pull their sled right up to the buffet.
Mm-hmm. I love the no one is left behind concept.
Exactly.
The race doesn't end until the Red Lantern is. People may eat, but
I love that concept. But we're all still waiting.
Exactly. Well, thank you again for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. I know I will be posting things about this. It's one of my favorite sports, and we really do appreciate you coming on again. Yes, you are the media diva, girl.
Well, thanks so much. And for anyone that's still feeling like there's some gaps left, they want to know more about the sport or the Yukon Quest itself and the International Sled Dog Race we've got going on here, you can head over to yukonquest.com, and there you can read all about the race. We've got the race rules posted as well. You can find out a bit about the veterinarians, where to watch the race and the rest of it, and a little bit about the organization too.
Great. Thank you very much. And Barry, if our listeners would like to reach you, what is a good email address for you?
Well, my email is Barry, B-A-R-R-Y, at hometravelagent.net. And Laureen?
My email address is sharptongued@fmac.com, and that is spelled S-H-A-R-P-T-O-N-G-U-E-D at MAC.com. You can also find me on Facebook or Twitter under Laureen R, and that's L-O-R-E-N-E-R. Great. Thank you very much, and we will talk to you next week.
Thank you, Tara.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Tara. Thank you, Laureen. And great information about the Yukon Quest. I wish I could have gotten the show up 2 or 3 weeks ago, but it just didn't work out that way. And maybe next year we can get a Tara back on and talk about the Yukon Quest prior to the race actually happening. But I think the important thing is to know about the Yukon Quest and how popular it is and how you might use this information to help clients, especially if they're interested in learning about a new sport and an exciting sport at that. So this could be a specialty that you may want to develop in your travel business, and I think it would be a great specialty. We have two news items. And the first news item is really good news, and this comes from a press release on the Business Wire. And what this is, it's about travel spending and how travel spending declined in 2009, but in 2010, it's expected that travel spending is going to increase by 6%. So that's good news for us travel agents and people in the travel business. And what the survey goes on to point out is that nearly two-thirds or 65% of the respondents could not afford a trip in 2009. But 2010 is going to be a better year. I know we all can't wait. Now, I should say that this Information comes from a company called Mintel, and I will have a link to the press release in the show notes if you want to delve into it further. And the second news item that I have is about the Wizarding World Vacation, and it's the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, and that is opening up, and you can book this now for your clients. And I would expect it to be a popular destination for a theme park. You know, the movies are popular and the book is very popular, so this theme park has to be popular too. And if you're not looking into this as a service to your clients, those that typically go to Disney, they may want to head out to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. And you might want to give them that option. Check it out. Learn more about it. And this information comes from a television station down in Orlando, Channel 13 News. And it's by Allison Walker, the entertainment reporter and anchor for Channel 13. And I'll have a link to this in the show notes. But a little bit more information on the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. The park opens up, or is scheduled to open up, on May 28th, but a Universal spokesman said that opening date may come sooner, but definitely in the spring sometime. You may want to head over to this article, click on the Wizarding World vacation links, and check it out. Get the information so that you can be prepared to book your clients to this exciting theme park. So with that, I'm going to wrap it up. And I want to remind you, next week, I am planning on having a show, even though I'm heading out on Saturday to Florida myself. But in the event that something does not work out right, that will be because I'm on the road and for some reason did not get a chance to do what I had planned to do prior to leaving. So anyhow, with that, you guys have a good week. If you're traveling, have safe travels and stay healthy. So we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye, everybody.